All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Matinee Talk, episode 49. I am one of your hosts, Johnny Lightfoot. With me, as always,
Julian Owens.
All right, so we're going to talk about a few movies. We're going to talk The Old Guard. Julian's going to talk a little bit about Greyhound, and then our in-depth review along with spoilers. We're going to go into the new Andy Samberg picture that is on Hulu, Palm Springs. Before that, we'll talk a little news and not a lot out of Hollywood. Matt Reeves apparently developing a Batman show for HBO Max. What are your thoughts on that?
So, like I said, I was skimming through that, I think, yesterday or this past weekend when it dropped. And I guess I'm confused, because it's like, what is the TV show going to entail? Where is it going to fit into the DCEU? Why is Matt Reeves doing another spinoff TV show of the movie that may not even be part of the DCEU? So I'm confused, because I didn't read it, but I was like, why are they making a TV show? So you might have more insight than I do, but that's all I know.
I guess it's going to be a companion piece to Matt Reeves, the Batman, and it's going to be basically a TV drama. It will be on HBO Max. It is being developed by Matt Reeves along with Terrence Winter.
Okay.
And I guess it's going to be set in the Gotham City Police Department. So
Gotham, basically.
Yeah. So Gotham, I don't know if you ever read it, but I was a big fan of Ed Brubaker's GCPD comic book series.
I have not read it yet. That was something that was on my list with the Rebirth Batman. I'm not ready yet.
Yeah, I guess it'll take place in the same universe as the Batman movie, but this will center around the Gotham Police Department. So I'm assuming a young Gordon, some other detectives, you know, maybe dealing with the fact that when Batman, you know, because this is early Batman, when there was early Batman, there was a lot of corruption in the GCPD
exactly.
That Gordon was trying to clean up. But kind of already got a little of that with the Gotham TV show.
So I was just going to tell you that. So for me, and I was literally talking about this with my brothers the other day. I don't know how you feel about Gotham, the TV show that was premiering on Fox and finished.
I liked
care.
It at first. Then I dropped it. As soon as they started bringing in all those villains and everything, I was like, this doesn't make sense. Like, Bruce Wayne's a little kid. I liked the stuff early on with Jim Gordon trying to like clean up the town.
So to your point, I said the exact same thing. This is crazy. So I was like, the first season, it somewhat caught my attention. It was something like, oh, okay, this is like Batman Year One, but Bruce is literally 10 years old after his parents just died. Okay. So I wasn't too mad about it, but I was still, you know, one of the Batman fans that are like, I mean, technically they all were at the same time going to be villains either way, or criminals regardless, but with their alias came because of Batman. So seeing the idea of their aliases somewhat manifesting through their daily lives when they were before Batman was cool. But like you said, the first season, okay, I dig it. Penguin is getting a little bit better. I keep forgetting who Jada Pinkett Smith is, who we'll get to later, who she was playing.
Fish.
Yes, sorry. That's right. She was playing Fish.
We're going to get into some Jada Pinkett Smith.
We definitely will. So, guys, hold your phone on that. So it was interesting to see that. But then when season two happened, when they started adding in, you know, more people, and then they started to try to do the Joker, you know, and all the other Batman villains that's in his rogues gallery, I was just like you. Okay, I don't care anymore. I dropped it. It just felt like there were too many things that they were trying to put in at the same pot. I feel like the first season kind of had footing, some kind of ground it could lay on. And then the rest of season two just didn't feel that way. And I even tried, I want to say about a week ago, to get into season three and see if it was anything better. Definitely wasn't. So I was just like, yeah, nope, I'm done with the show. So I just hope Matt Reeves saw I guess some of us aren't the flaws that was in, you know, the Gotham TV show. And hopefully it gets better with what Matt Reeves is doing. I mean, I can't say more than what he's done with the Rise of the Planet of the Apes franchise. So hopefully he can bring something new and different to the table with this GCPD series. We don't know. I'll see.
Yeah. So essentially written here, it says the series will be set in the world. Set in the world Reeves is creating for the Batman feature and will build upon the film's examination of the anatomy of corruption in Gotham City. Launching a new Batman universe across multiple platforms, the series will extend the world established in the movie and further explore the myriad of complex characters of Gotham.
Okay.
I mean, it's HBO as opposed to, Fox. You know, as opposed to Fox Network television. So, yes. I mean, even the shows that I don't really care for on HBO, I have to always admit, like, they're very well made.
Yes, their production value is way more than it is, like, with a Fox, sometimes FX, or even Netflix, you know? Like, I feel like HBO has given us what it means to have high-quality shows since the beginning of HBO. So I'm not hesitant as much as I was with when Gotham was introduced back all the way in 2012, 2013. But I'm still like, is this going to be better? We'll see. We will see.
All right, cool. So, I mean, when we get more information, we'll probably talk about it a little more. I'm sure there won't be much coming out about it until closer to when the Batman is gearing up for release. Next little bit of news. Normally, we don't get into Hollywood gossip and celebrity gossip, but...
Yes, we have to this time.
News is imperative, and we want to talk about what's in the news. And what's in the news is two couples, or one former couple, going through, for lack of a better word, some shit. And so Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, they're going through all of their court case, and there's stuff coming out about her,
a lot of things with her,
physically abusive, apparently taking a crap in this man's bed, like all this stuff. And you're just like, wow,
what is going on? And one thing I did read, I want to say, committing to that also, I forget what actress was a friend of Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, but Amber asked for her child to come with her for a publicity stunt to say that she was a good parent. So there was some footage that TMZ released, I want to say a couple of years ago, like a year or two ago. And it shows Amber Heard walking down the aisle, giving, I want to say it was Johnny Depp or somebody that was close to Johnny Depp, the boy, and then getting in her car and dipping out. And it's just supposed to show a little PR stunt that she actually like cared for the kid, but find out it was a friend of her, of the celebrity. And I was just like, wait, what? Okay, Amber. All right. That makes sense. So yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. I don't know how to put it out. What do you think though, Johnny? Like,
I think these are two people who were attracted to each other that are both a certain type of crazy.
Yes.
And their two crazies just didn't mix well. And I think it's a very different type of relationship than what, because I think Winona Ryder even got brought in as a character witness for Johnny Depp.
That's what it was. It was Winona Ryder. You're right. Yes, it was. That's what I was talking about.
And Winona Ryder is obviously also crazy, but like obviously her and Johnny Depp's crazies didn't become violent and vile, and Amber Heard and Johnny Depp just didn't work in there. Obviously, two crazy, good-looking people who fell in love or fell in lust and whatever and decided to be very intolerant to one another and did some horrible things to each other. And, like, do you think at this point either of them gets canceled? And if so, which one?
So they already tried with Johnny, right? So let's go wind the clocks back to 2018 when they tried to cancel him for the Crimes of Grindelwald, and it didn't work out, right? And Amber, I want to say that same year, later that year, had Aquaman come out. So, I mean, in my personal opinion, I don't think either will be necessarily canceled, but both of them should take this as a lesson and be like, we should never do this again. It's at this point, it's like he say, she say. Amber Heard said that Johnny Depp has been beating on her. Now Johnny Depp has actual accusations and actual evidence that she's been beating on him. And they're just, this is like one of the nastiest court battles I've seen in a long time. So I don't think either one will get canceled, but I think both of them should look in the mirror and be like, okay, how can I make myself better and never do this crap again? You know, I think that's what should happen.
All right, let's move on to our next celebrity gossip couple.
Just like, you know, no, I don't even say anything.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, that one's just nasty. This next one's just weird. It's just weird.
Weird isn't the word, Johnny. It's just dumb. I think it's dumb, but we'll get into it.
So this all started because about a week ago, this man, Augie, came out and did this interview, and this man was in love. He fell in love with a married woman, and it's weird because this man was also a friend of Jaden Smith, and Will and Jada Pinkett Smith thought of him kind of like a family friend slash, oh yeah, he's almost like a kid of ours.
He was 20, I want to say he was about in his early 20s when he rose to fame in the hip-hop scene, the R&B and hip-hop scene in like 2015-16. So yeah, he was in his early 20s when Will and Jada met him. Ugh.
So why this became a thing is, so in this interview, he basically goes on the record saying, oh yeah, I had Will's permission to have relations with Jada. And Will was not happy about that because while there were rumblings that they had an open relationship, whatever, they came out and did a red table talk together, basically saying, no, that wasn't the case. We were going through some stuff and we were on a break. We took a break, which couples do. And it wasn't about anybody's business outside of them. And apparently on this break, Jada and August formed some type of relationship. This man fell in love. And obviously for her, she was in a dark place, didn't know what she wanted. They wanted to each separate and like get their own life straight before trying to do something else. And then eventually they got back together and healed their wounds and were good until this dude came out, said all this stuff. And I feel so bad for Will. Because to have this other guy say like, yeah, I had his permission to sleep with his wife. And that was obviously not the case.
So I'll put it this way. So long story short, so like what you said, Johnny, I don't know how to explain this. It's dumb in my opinion. So if anybody watches, I don't know if you watched it, Johnny, the Red Table Talk, did you watch that?
Yeah, I watched it.
So, like, she's on the Red Table Talk, and she explains all this happens. You know, like you just said, Will and Jada were in the separation part. Hey, you find your happiness, I find my happiness. Let's go from there, right? Cool, let's do it. And she goes and she says, has some, I call it.
And she called it an entanglement.
It's not an
entanglement. And then when you see Will's face when she says that and he goes, an entanglement?
Exactly.
And he says, no, tell everybody what you did.
You was in a relationship with him, and I call it a predatory relationship. Reason why is like, you, for people who don't know August, I've seen it, right? Like I said, he was in the rise of the hip-hop fame. He was this hot and young singing rapper who came out in the late 2015, early 2016, but dropped out of the face of the earth because he got sick. His sister was going through some trouble, so he literally dipped out, and Will and Jada were helping him. So I call that like you being mother and fatherly to this dude. And you basically took that after, you know, you and Will are going through it and try to grow a relationship out there. That's a motherly, predatory relationship. Granted, did y'all get better with it? Sure. but you shouldn't be playing with somebody else's emotions because of that. Now, she did say she apologizes. It was all a phase. It was this whole other thing, but it's just weird. And the way that they both were like, you know, I got you, you know, you might get me back. No, I got you back. And it's like, who says that? And then the final thing that literally bothered me about the whole thing was they say, you know, we live together, we die together, bad marriage for life. No, absolutely not. Like, that's bad marriage is you going and having an affair with somebody that y'all took care of. No, fam. Like, no.
Yeah, and he just, through the whole thing, he looks uncomfortable. And
yes!
He looks sad. He looks, very hurt, sad. Like, okay, hurt. Because this, essentially, he's reliving something he had to deal with, like, whatever it was, 4 or 5 years ago. Because, you know, there was probably a point sometime in, like, 2016 when they got back together, and she probably told him, hey, and he had to deal with that. And 4 years later, I'm sure by now, he's probably at least come to some form of peace with it. And now it's gotten all brought back up. And
he still feels like he's hurt about it. And I feel like this is a trauma point in their relationship that they won't speak about, which I get. They don't want to. That's their business. But still, it's just like, guys, this is something that y'all both dealt with. Agree with it, move on with it, you know? And for y'all to make, I felt like they were making a joke about it. I don't know if you would agree with me, but it seemed like it was just like it happened. It's okay, we're better. Like just brushing it under the rug when some whole man is out here professing his love to you. It's just weird to me. It's absolutely weird, but.
Yeah, I feel like for her, she's more like, oh yeah, it was this thing, it was whatever. It was in an entanglement. And Will Smith is more like your daddy when you were in trouble and he knows what you did.
Yes.
He wants you to tell him. Like, yeah, no, I know what you did, but
follow what it is.
Go ahead and say it. Like,
exactly.
Tell me what you did, but dad already knows. He just wants to hear it from your mouth.
Yeah, and that's why I felt like, to be honest with you, I felt like that whole thing was a PR stunt, the publicity stunt for her to put herself on the red table. And like you said, the whole thing was just like entanglement, you know, it was a relationship. And
I was in a dark place and I grew from it. And I learned a lot about myself and I learned to love myself. And that made us a stronger marriage.
Yeah.
Whatever, Jada.
Yeah, whatever you say, Jada. Like, if you feel like that's what's in your heart and your desire, sure. But we know the truth. You play in the game and you think you're playing the game well. No, Jada. It's cute, but no. Let's not try that again.
All
anyways.
Right. So, you're welcome. There's your celebrity gossip for the week. We don't have any like Hollywood news to talk about. No breaking news in Hollywood. So we're going to talk celebrity gossip. And now we're going to talk some film. First, Julian's going to talk a little bit about Greyhound, which is on Apple TV Plus. I have not yet watched that one. I will be soon, but Julian, take it away.
So with this movie, I was very intrigued by it. Like I told Johnny before the show, I was interested with it. It was very actiony, I will call it. Very actiony and very tense. Johnny, remember we talked about Crawl last year and how, like, the gator kill seems pretty dope?
Tension.
Yes, the tension build of Crawl. It felt like this. So this movie is about, what, 90 minutes, if 100. I think no more than 100 minutes. I think right at 90. It's Tom Hanks on his first, like, warship voyage to in World War II, right? And they have a whole bunch of U-boats, and, you know, the Germans are trying to, like, sink all these ships before they get to overseas. And what an excellent use of those 90 minutes. In the first 10, 15 minutes, you know what you're getting yourself into. You know Tom Hanks, this is his first rodeo, and he's going to be the captain of this ship and trying to lead this voyage. And when things hit the rails, you're sitting there just watching it. Now, granted, there's certain moments in the movie where the CGI is just like, seriously? y'all could have done better. But the way that Tom Hanks navigates and presents himself on the screen majority of the time is phenomenal. The way that the secondary characters are pushing themselves and keeping the adrenaline pumping, and how the music is using its certain ways to just keep that adrenaline going. And it gives you like maybe like what I feel like with Crawl gave you like what, 5, maybe 10 minutes of like breathers in between some scenes, whereas this movie gives you, okay, you got a minute, take your minute, take your breath, let's move. And it was a nonstop, really good action film that I definitely would watch again. It was really good. 3.5 stars. Can't give it 4, but it was damn good. I have it in, I think, 12 or 11 of 50 films this year. Like, it was a really great film. I would definitely say so.
Very cool. Yeah, we're getting a little, you know, dad movie action for the summer. Because it definitely looks like a dad movie, and Tom Cruise is America's dad, so I'm definitely looking forward to checking it out.
Definitely worth the 90 minutes, and definitely a dad movie. Definitely, we gotta band together for the same cause and escape against all odds. And yeah, it's definitely that kind of movie. Loved every moment of it. Absolute phenomenal. Highly recommend it.
Very cool. Now we're going to do a quick non-spoiler review of The Old Guard before we get into Palm Springs. Netflix's Old Guard, starring Charlize Theron, action superstar. After seeing this, I was like, okay, like it's good. I gave it 3 stars.
I gave it 3. I have to be nice. No, I gave it 3 stars as well as you. Yes, 3 stars.
I will say, like, okay, I think Charlize Theron has definitely planted herself as, I got my Oscar, I did all of my dramas, now I learned how to fight and stuff and shoot guns, so I'm just gonna do these action tentpole movies.
And
I'm fine with it. Like, I do think it was a little long, clocked in a little over 2 hours.
Yes.
Brett and I, after watching it though, we're like, man, but like, are we still in that day and age where your action hero can't have any personality?
Thank you. Thank you for pulling that out. So to your point, so I think the most uncharismatic person throughout the entire film was, again, Charlize Theron. And let's wind the clocks back almost 5 years ago when she did Mad Max Fury Road when she was Furiosa. That was probably the best action female lead we have had in a very long time. And she brought the charisma, she brought the action and all that with it. And that was going to be one of my biggest complaints to this review, this non-spoiler review, is she was the most boring one out of all of them. And I hate to say it, I don't remember most of their names, but like, this was...
I would take the couple over.
Yes.
In terms of personality, I would take the guy who, the alcoholic, the drunk guy.
Booker. Yes, Booker.
Yeah, Booker. I didn't care for the new recruit. The
Kiki Marine. Lane? Okay.
Yeah, I have not seen If Beale Street Could Talk, but I heard she's, you know, that's one of the reasons she got this role.
Exactly. Which is
directed by the director of For Love and Basketball.
So... Go ahead, John. Go ahead.
I was like, oh, you did. Without spoiling it, you don't give this character who's being pushed into this world very quickly, I might add, like from the time she learns about this world to the end of the movie, I think it takes place over a few days.
Yeah, 3 or 4 days.
You don't give her any sort of like emotional arc, really.
No emotional depth. You give her somewhat character development, but not enough. And me and Courtney, we were talking about this after the movie. The director of this film, I keep forgetting her name, Gina Price Bythewood, even with Love and Basketball, if anybody's seen Love and Basketball, Beyond the Lights, or any other Bythewood films that she's made, there's not that much character development. And through the second act, it's always so egregious to get through. I feel like you said, Johnny,
She does a lot of exposition. Yes. Where it's like people sitting in a room or sitting at a table
talking.
And they're talking about. And I was like, I told Brett, I was like, what's crazy to me is, so you take a movie that came out, I think 17 years ago, the first Underworld movie.
Yes.
All right. You have a female action lead who's also very stoic, not a lot of personality. But you know what that movie does give you?
A lot of damn action.
She does a voiceover exposition in the first 5 minutes that lets you know, this is the world you're in. This is what I do. This is those people. This is what we do. Here's the world you're about to watch. And then from that point on, we just see some cool action, which is perfectly fine.
And so I was going to say,
I don't know why this movie couldn't do that. So apparently it's based on a comic.
It is based off a comic. I've saw a couple of the pages off of it, and it's pretty dope. It's pretty interesting concept. And to your point, Johnny, I don't understand why more action movies don't do this route. Like, I get it. Y'all don't want to hit the same drum every day, but I don't need to know all the exposition being talked through characters. Transformers does that. It bothers the hell out of me. You know, in other action films that could be so good, but they just boil down and literally just talk you through the whole movie. Again, going back to Artemis Fowl, like, I don't need you to spoon feed me everything that needs to happen. If you're going to, I only want to hear it once, shoot through it, and then let's get on with it. I don't need a sitting chair with Chiwetel telling me everything that's going on, why Charlize Theron is doing everything that they're doing, or what's the motivation between everybody. Like, I don't need you to spoon feed me that. Just give me action. Give me some scenes where it's like, okay, that makes sense, and let's move on with our world. Too much exposition for me. I agree.
Yeah, and I feel like you have an actor like Ejiofor, very accomplished actor who's very capable, and you don't give him anything to until you give him one scene of exposition at the very end, and then basically set him up for a sequel. Which this, along with Extraction, both obviously set themselves up with, oh yeah, we're going to do sequels. And at the end of the day, I think Extraction is a hell of a lot more rewatchable. I think this has a cooler like lore that I would want to explore more.
Better world building, yes.
But I think Extraction has better action.
Yes.
I think it was better direction. And yet the actual lore, the premise, is not as interesting. Like, if you were to read the synopsis for both side by side, Extraction would be the one where you're like, oh, that could be a made for TV movie. Old Guard, I'm like, oh, that's a tentpole franchise. That's something we can build multiple movies on. And yet Extraction's the one where, like, I could go back and watch that 12-minute action scene. I could go back and rewatch the climax of that. This movie, there's
never going to watch again.
Two maybe memorable fight scenes, but at the end of the day, like, there's more memorable fight scenes in Atomic Blonde. Give me Atomic Blonde over this.
And yeah, exactly. Like, as much as I've passively like Atomic Blonde, this had way better choreography and but way better scenes than what we got with the Old Guard. I just, like, Bythewood probably shouldn't have been the best director for this. I felt like this was decent, but not fantastic. It could have been fantastic. It could have been, should have been, but it wasn't. And you set it up for a sequel where, to be honest with you, like you said, Johnny, I don't care. I don't care for the sequel. It was cool.
No, not at all. And on top of that, Brett and I also talked, like, can I just say that these were some of the worst needle drops
yes.
in like recent movie history in terms of like dropping certain pop songs at certain times in movies and it just being a horrible needle drop. Whereas Atomic Blonde, like every time they did a needle drop, it was fire.
Yes, I felt like this was trying to be Suicide Squad with this terrible needle drop that we got in Bohemian Rhapsody bad. You know what I'm saying? I think it was that kind of bad, you know? And This movie, like I said, it had moments. It had some decent moments, some good, some maybe good character development moments. Like, I'm not going to say it was just terrible all around, but it had, like, I would say two or three scenes where you're like, oh, wow, that sucks. Or, oh, wow, okay, I can dig that. Everything else sucked. Like, it was bad. And I don't know. I gave it a 3 because it's not as bad as any other movie I saw. That's 2.5 on my radar. But I don't know if I'd ever watch this again.
And I'm not watching this again. I gave it a generous 3. But yeah, I think even if they do make a sequel, I probably won't revisit this one before watching the sequel. Like, I don't feel like it's something I'm like, oh yeah, I need to go back and rewatch the first one before I watch the sequel. I don't feel that way at all.
Nope. I don't need to.
All right. Well, we're going to get into what I think is probably a top 5 film, maybe top 10, top okay. 5.
Top 10 for me. Top 10 for me.
We're going to get into Palm Springs, but before we do that, we do have a word from our sponsor. So we will be right back after these words. And we are back. We're talking Palm Springs, the Andy Samberg comedy on Hulu. Plays with a little sci-fi action. You got some J.K. Simmons in there. So overall, what were your thoughts?
Damn good. I right now have it at top 10, but I'm going to be honest with you. I think it might jump up later in the year. I think it's at 7 or 8 for the year for me, but phenomenal rom-com. Like, we talked about this before. I felt like last year Netflix was trying to bring back the rom-com scene and bring back things that people loved about rom-coms. But Hulu and Anna Samberg, wow, y'all have done a damn good job. Like, really good movie. What about you?
Oh, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Very engaging.
Yes.
An easy 90-minute watch. And I didn't really know much about it other than, oh, it's this rom-com on Hulu. It's got Andy Samberg. I dig The Lonely Island. I liked Popstar. And I get into this, and then within the first, like, 10 minutes, it turns my idea of what I was about to be watching on its head.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, we have the whole Groundhog's Day sort of experiment going on here, but with these two individuals during the day of a wedding. And yeah, we got some sci-fi elements, and then we've got some mystery, and then you're like, who is that guy? And then you tell that whole story about how they met, and you're like, man, this is hilarious, and J.K. Simmons is awesome, and I like our two leads. I really thought they had great chemistry, and I was really rooting for them. And even throughout, I was just like, yeah, I mean, if you guys are stuck, go have fun, live your life every day. Like, you could just see them slowly getting closer and closer and closer, more intimate. And it was really just an overall fantastic story.
And I would agree. That's one thing that really kept me going, is you understand that, you know, you're in a time loop, but you don't understand why and how you got here, except for once this specific situation, and now you're living the same day over and over again. Now, not going to put any, like, context behind some of this, not yet, but Christina Milioti and Samberg both, like, brought charisma and, like, natural, like, attraction to people, like, I haven't seen since, again, what was the movie? A Star is Born. I haven't seen any, like, natural attraction. Like, we're just progressively just getting to know each other and getting to love each other's presence as the day goes on. Granted, like we're going to talk about later, some of these things, you're just like, sure, I wouldn't have done that, but I mean, cool. But yeah, it was phenomenal. I enjoyed every ride of it. The script was nice. And I don't know who this director is. I've never heard of them before. And this was their directorial debut, I know that much, but great way to start your career. Like, fantastic movie. I really enjoyed every bit I got.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, like I said, you take a premise that's been done before and you throw it in a genre where it hasn't really been used before, to my knowledge.
No.
And
unless you count Groundhog Day, but I don't.
Yeah. And then you have a film like 51st States, which is, you know, it's Adam Sandler being Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore trying to be cute. And
yeah, exactly.
And then you do something like this and you put this couple or not couple in this situation. And by the end of it, I was just in joy with the movie. It's a similar feeling I had to Happy Death Day. Like Happy Death Day was a really nice surprise because I kind of knew what premise I was set up for. And even with the sequel, I don't feel like Happy Death Day was as well done as this film in terms of its construction and using a clever usage of time travel and having these two people really learn, go from a certain place. And we'll get into some spoilers here in a minute, but grow from a certain space they're in to basically using what's happening to them to try to grow as people.
Yes.
And it's very fulfilling, I think.
And to your point, right? I was going to say that too. Like with the, I want to say this is also 90 minutes, like really good 90 minute movies this year. Hot Take Hollywood, if you're listening, please continue making 90 minute movies. We don't need to be in the theater for 2 hours. If you can get the story done in 90 minutes, please do that. Anyways, back to my point. Like, Andy, you see him, and as you're like coming to understand what's been going on, like you said, Andy is coming up in terms of, he's like, look, I've been doing this for whatever, how long it's been. I'm just rolling with the punches. I don't care what's going on with me and things of that nature. And it just grows into this thing where Andy is like learning himself and learning what he can take and stuff like that. And as that happens, Christina Milioti is also growing and understanding herself as well, which is pretty damn good. And of course, for both of them, there's a reason why they are coming to this event in the way they are, which we won't get into again until spoilers. But at towards the end of the movie, they realize that they take that negative and turn it into a positive. And just seeing a rom-com do something that's not reinventing the wheel per se, but doing something a little different to make the wheel spin just a little bit different was pretty damn interesting. And I loved watching their journey go through basically Groundhog Day. And I will say, like Johnny said, with J.K. Simmons and his comedic pacing and his joke landing is throughout this entire movie, like fucking amazing also. Excuse my language, but yes, absolutely amazing. Loved everybody in this film. So yeah, really good.
Yeah, I mean, with that, do you want to go ahead and jump into spoilers?
Let's do it.
Okay, so obviously we have this time travel element. There's this cave and these two
from
people,
an earthquake, right?
Yes. Yeah,
earthquake.
And yep, they basically keep having to live Kristen's character, her sister's wedding day, and Andy Samberg is also attending that wedding as basically the boyfriend of one of the, I guess,
bridesmaids, you want to call it,
bridesmaids. Yeah. And so he's apparently been living this day for a while before she gets put in the loop.
Yes.
And yeah, you take this premise of this Groundhog's Day, and you kind of wonder, based on like the first 10 minutes, you're like, why is Andy Samberg's character acting this certain kind of way? Like
what? Yes.
Like on this person's wedding day, he's being all like not caring
and wearing different clothes, not wearing a suit. He's just like taking the day in like full stride. And to your point, what I thought was also cool real quick was like how Andy, we're thinking that he's about to go make this egregious speech in front of everybody, but he doesn't. He doesn't make this speech. He doesn't say something that like pisses you off. And you're like, wow, even though you're being weird at this wedding, that was a damn good speech. That was a really good, like, quote unquote, best man speech. And from there, you realize why he said what he said, where all of this is coming from. And you're like, oh, it's because you've been here for a while and you know how to speed shit up.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is, like, I'm like, wow, this is really weird. Are you having Andy Samberg basically play this idiot? Like, he's just, he doesn't care about these people. So he's just going to go to this wedding, act like a fool. But then he makes that speech and you're like, oh. And then, you know, they meet and they go down to the beach and do their thing. And then that's when the mysterious bowman appears and you're like, what the hell? Like, now he's getting shot with arrows? And then that's when the first reset happens and you're like, oh, he knew that, man. And now he just died and now he's reliving that day over again. And you're like, interesting.
Okay.
And then you're like, oh, and now she's a part of it. And so now they got to kind of do a little exposition by him kind of taking her on a journey and being like, yeah, I've been doing this for a while. Look, I've done this, I've done that, I've done this. And it's because I just keep getting a redo.
And to your point, what I loved also was the fact that, like, it did give you exposition, but it wasn't like, I'm spoon-feeding you exposition. You're like, what the fuck is going on? And you're basically Christine, and you're like, what? Well, why has the day reset for me? What's going on? And she, and basically Andy is like explaining all of it's happening to her. And when she's like, oh, but I want to do this, tried it. I've done this, tried it. And you're like, okay, so you have been doing this for a while, which is why you seem so great at the speech yesterday, which is actually today. Okay, now how the hell you need to get out of there, you know? And the concept was so damn good. And like, to your point, you're sitting there like, okay, this is about to be a good night. He's cheating. He's about to cheat on his, oh no, not going to cheat on his girlfriend because his girlfriend's been cheating on him with somebody else. Okay. And is that JK with a fucking bow and arrow? Why is he shooting him?
Yeah. And the fact that he's like, yeah, I think he kind of got bored because he only shows up from time to time now.
Yes.
Whereas I guess he used to show up every time to kill him. Now it's just every now and then he shows up and you're like, oh, interesting. And she's trying to figure out ways of how she can end it. And he's like explaining to her, all right, yep, do that. And hopefully we die quick.
I don't want to be like, sitting there grieving in the ICU. You know, I'm like, wow, okay, you have been doing this for a while. Yeah, like, sorry to take that, but yeah, it was funny. That was funny.
Yeah, no, and then after she kind of like reconciles with the fact that, like, yeah, I'm just gonna keep reliving this day. Then they're just like, okay, well, every day we're just gonna go live to the fullest, and that's where we get like a little adorable montage of the two of them each day doing just silly, stupid shit. Where they're basically getting to know one another. They're learning each other's quirks and personality. And, you know, she even asks him about, like, who the different people he's tried to hook up with, which I thought was pretty funny as you go through, like, the little mini montage of, like, oh, yeah, he slept with her. He tried to sleep with that person, but struck out. He even tried with the bride just to see what would happen. And... so it was very endearing, and then of course inevitably before the third act you have the falling out,
yes,
between the two, and him trying to find her because basically she's able to run away every day before he's able to find her.
Go ahead, Johnny. Go ahead.
And so, so he ends up going on this self journey because now he realizes, like, damn, I was falling in love with this girl and I messed up. And he's trying to figure that stuff out and even goes so far as to go find J.K. Simmons to kind of talk to him about what happened with them and why did he disappear? Why'd you stop trying to hunt me? All of that stuff. And J.K. Simmons talking about how, you know, he's just come to finally enjoy life. Like, it took him being in this time loop for him to appreciate his own family and his own life.
Yes, absolutely. Because he was running from him. I'd call it running. He was running away from his wife and his twins that he got, because it was just minute to him. It didn't mean that much to him as much as he did. Then he went up to his wedding and got this world of a lifetime chance with Annie Sandberg. And Sandberg actually, stupid, like, gets too much, like, got too much drugs on him. And basically him and JK go through the cave, or he lets JK go through the cave, and he got caught in a loop. So that's why Roy, that's his name, Roy has been so pissed with him, because he's like, you let me in this fucking cave, and now I have to relive this day every day. And he grow to appreciate it after Steve, like, runs him over with a cop truck. I mean, SUV, but whole different conversation. And he sits there, and he's like, you know, sitting in the ICU, I had to realize, like, I took all of my stuff for granted. I had a beloved wife. I had a daughter. My son is still watering his dog shit. And I've had
and
it
I love
great.
It. And I'm
yes.
Love I've I had have a good great. Life.
And so you need to find your life. You need to find your great place in life. And I thought that was so heartwarming, you know? Like, it could have been some other bullshit way where, you know, somebody who wasn't in the loop gave him this aha crackpot idea. Or, you know, Christine with her quantum physics theory, which we'll get to later, how she basically was figuring her shit out. But for J.K. Simmons to be in the exact same predicament as him, it's just like, you know what? I have to learn to appreciate what I have to be where I want to be, you know? And that's what I learned being in this loop, and you need to find that too. I thought it was, like I said, really heartfelt. It somewhat trimmed on, you know, tropes of rom-com, but it still, like I said, planted different seeds, and it was a really, really great concept and thought that I enjoyed. I really enjoyed that about this film.
Yeah, and I thought it was a very powerful moment from, you know, a very small character in the whole, you know, grand scheme of the story. And then the meantime, while Andy Samberg's doing this, Kristen's character is learning quantum physics and basically spending every day that she wakes up studying and learning and doing video chats with professors and trying to figure out a way to break the loop while ignoring her own personal transgressions.
Mm-hmm. And what I thought was so interesting, and it kind of not sucked, but it was kind of like a wild moment why she just hated being in that loop, was because she woke up to the fiance of her sister, because Christine is the sister of the bride-to-be, and, you know, she's going to marry her soon fiancé, but she wakes up on the day of their wedding with, like, her sister's fiancé, and it's just like she had to regret every damn day that she slept with her sister's husband. And I love the idea that, like, we couldn't understand why she didn't just want to be in this place so much. And now when we finally got it, I was like, wow, I would understand why I would feel the same way too if I was that kind of a shitty person, you know? But it was really, really thought-provoking, and I enjoyed that. Now my biggest question at the end of the movie, which pertains to nothing, was like, is she going to practice or teach quantum physics now since she did all that shit to a time loop, you know? So I don't know, but it was really good. I enjoyed it a lot. Really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. Mondo's actually going to do a poster drop about it, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah, the day we released this episode at 11 o'clock on a Wednesday. I was like, wow, already. And it looks good. It really looks good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got the dinosaurs in the background and then them chilling on those pizza slice pool floaties.
On somebody else's pool, yes.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this. I give it four stars.
Definitely gave it a four, absolutely, as well. Like I said,
this is one I would revisit easily. Easy 90-minute watch.
Easy 90-minute watch that I would love to watch. Yeah, I have it at 7 out of 50. So I have Invisible Man, number one, Hamilton, the musical, The Way Back, The Willoughbys, Bad Education, and The Five Bloods before it. But yeah, like, it's a tough-knit race between the top five. I think that if I were to rewatch Palm Springs again, it probably will jump up to top five. But yeah, fantastic rom-com. Really great concept, really great story, great performances from Sandberg and Milioni. Speaking of which, I wanted to make sure I was right before I said this. Was this her first, like, lead role in a movie? Because I only remember her in secondary and supporting characters.
Yeah, I think so, because I don't even think she's really done much work since Fargo.
I think that was the last film she'd done. Let me do some work. Because like you said, I only seen her in like TV shows, right? TV shows. Mm-hmm. And she was somebody's bride in some movie. Like, let me see, Christine Milian. Yeah, she was in the Wolf of Wall Street. And she was in, Fargo. And like, that was literally much it. And like, I remember, wasn't she like Leonardo DiCaprio's first wife before he marries Margot Robbie, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, I think you're right on that.
So she literally, this is her first role where she basically takes a full swing and is a leading woman, and she does a damn good job. Like, Christine, I want to see you in more things. Like, absolutely great. Like, keep doing what you're doing.
Yep, fantastic. After a rewatch, we'll see where I have it. I'm very curious because I need to rewatch The Vast of Night, which I currently have at 2. I haven't rewatched that since it came out on Prime.
I was about to say, it's on Amazon Prime now, right?
So I haven't seen it since Overlook last year. Right. And yeah, I was talking to Brett about it, and he was like, yep. He was like, I rewatched it, and it leapfrogged Invisible Man. So I was like, I need to rewatch that.
Okay, so before I go to work tomorrow, I'll probably watch The Vast tonight. Okay, cool. Okay, perfect. I'm going to have to see what I can do about that. Cool. Well, I guess, is there anything else you wanted to say about Palm Springs before we wrap it up?
No, I mean, if you've got a Hulu subscription, definitely go take a look at that. It is well worth the 90 minutes.
After the many movies that the Hulu has, that is definitely one that I say, this summer, if you had a chance, please watch it. Fantastic movie, really good. Definitely a couple's movie if you can, but if not, still a great movie to watch. Highly recommend.
Definitely. All right, folks, with that, episode 49 is in the can. Julian, where can the kids find you?
You guys can find me at Instagram and Twitter at King Julian Owens. And where can the kids find you, Johnny?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny the Wonder. And also my reviews and lists on Letterboxd at Johnny Boy Wonder. With that, we will talk to all of y'all here in 2 weeks.
See you next time.
Later.